What's up and welcome back to A Rarity, two MCUs in review back to back, something that I get the feeling is going to happen a lot more as more Disney Plus projects and more movies continue to come out from Marvel Studios. Of course, I'm Tim Geddes and I'm joined by the big daddy Greg Miller.
Hello, Timothy.
Hello, Greg. The producer slash seducer, Nick Scarpino.
Top of the evening to you, Tim.
The big dog, Kevin Coelho.
What's up?
And rounding out the group, we got the one and only Nitro Rifle, Andy Cortez.
Hey, Tim. What's up, man?
What's up, Andy? How you doing?
I'm all right, man. Just
what'd you eat for lunch today?
Working out this ranking. I'm almost done with my salad.
Whoa. Hey!
Nice. What's the salad count for this week, Andy?
I'm on number three right now, big dog.
What? Only two days so far. That's wild.
I know.
Yeah. Thank you. Pretty good. Of course, this is Kinda Funnies in Review, where each and every week we get together to rank, review, and recap different movie franchises. And sometimes we do it twice a week, like this week, where later this week we're going to be recording Jurassic World in Review, which is very exciting. We're going to be doing that on Thursday for people on patreon.com/kindoffunny, which is where you can go to get the show as we record it and ad free, just like our Patreon producers, Molecule, Fargo, Brady, and Anonymous have done. But if you didn't want to do that, you could watch it later on youtube.com/kindoffunny or roosterteeth.com. And if you wanted to get it as a podcast, you just got to search your favorite podcast service for Kinda Funny in Review, and we'll be right there for you. If there is a movie franchise you love, chances are we have ranked, reviewed, and recapped it here on this show. So go check it out. Today we're brought to you by MeUndies and Credit Karma, but we'll talk all about that later. I want to get right into it. Let's talk about Moon Knight, released on March 30th, 2022 through May 4th, 2022. Weekly, we got six episodes. This is the first Marvel Studios series ever to not include any previously established characters. So interesting thing to keep in mind there. And this is the third time that Oscar Isaac has played a Marvel character. He previously played Apocalypse in X-Men Apocalypse and voiced Miguel O'Hara in Spider-Man, or AKA Spider-Man 2099. All right. In Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, and we'll be doing that as well when the sequel Across the Spider-Verse comes out next year. This had six episodes going from 44 to 53 minutes, making it one of the longer Disney Plus shows so far in terms of runtime. And it was directed by two different combinations of people. Mohamed Diab did episodes 1, 3, 5, and 6, and Aaron Moorhead and Justin Benson as a team did episodes 2 and 4. That is his name, Kevin. And the music was done by Hisham Nazi, an Egyptian composer. Nazi is best known for scoring numerous Egyptian features and TV shows, including The Blue Elephant, Ibrahim Labiad, and Tito. This is his first major English language project. A lot of Egyptian people were part of the back end of the show and the creation of it from a whole bunch of different elements, including costume design and things like that. So that's pretty damn cool. And that's all I got for you for the rigmarole, the intro, the facts, all that stuff. I know we just talked about this episode by episode over on Screencast, as we always do for the Marvel Disney Plus shows. But here we are. It's time to talk about our thoughts now that we've had some time to sit with it. Andy Cortez, where are you at with Moon Knight?
I'll tell you what, Tim.
Tell me.
We've been hearing a lot of articles and a lot of stories from
hearing a lot of articles
from different people at Marvel. And we've been hearing Oscar Isaac talk about it, about how this could just be a little standalone thing, right? They may never revisit this. And God, I hope that's the truth, because like if we can get a live action Spider-Man as Oscar Isaac, like if we could bring Miguel into a live action version of itself, that's ideal, right? Like let's pretend this is, just say Sony made this fucking one, right? Let's push this one aside, because the more time I have to think about this show, the more and more I am disappointed by it. I think it started off incredibly strong to the point where I was like, damn, I'm excited for a Marvel show. I haven't felt this way in a while. Hawkeye did not a whole lot for me, except for like Hayley Steinfeld's great. And of course, we saw Florence Pugh more on the screen in addition to her time in the Black Widow movie. And then we got What If, and that was just mostly a miss for me.
I'm sorry, Nick, what did we get?
What If?
There it is. So we got after this first episode hit, I was like, God damn, this ended perfectly. This is mysterious. And I'm kind of, I don't know what's going on. It reminds me of like watching an HBO show where they sort of just kind of leave little hints out there for, you know, oh, is this happening? Is that maybe this character? I just love that whole mystery aspect for it. And then it just kind of lost me. I feel like the episodes got less and less interesting as we went on. I wasn't super into a whole lot of the Indiana Jones style tomb raiding sequences. Some of the CG was especially bad in those moments. Episode 5, I think, is an obvious standout. That's one where I thought, wow, maybe we can end it on a high note. And episode 6, I felt, was lacking as well. So I feel like I am pretty low on this show, unfortunately, for as much as I love Oscar Isaac and Ethan Hawke.
Nick Scarpino.
Yeah, I'm right there with Andy on this one, where it started, I was intrigued, and I thought, hey, we're going to do something kind of different with the genre, or sorry, with the medium, like they did with WandaVision, which I thought was a really, really, really good use of the television medium. And as we kind of went on, I was it was ups and downs for me. Fifth episode, I was right there with Andy, where I was like, this is coming out. This is coming back for me, and it's really, really cool. And then, unfortunately, I think the last episode that we watched that of the season just suffers from the same last episode problem that all of them have, where it's just kind of a letdown. And in this one, it's almost more insulting because they didn't even bother choreographing the climax. He just kind of passes out for a second and wakes up and he's beating the bad guy. And I'm like, oh, okay. Like, I understand why they're doing that. And it's interesting. And it has a payoff at the end, but it's kind of disappointing. And I think that that a lot of the show is trying to do way too much with what they have, and they don't need to do that. You've got Oscar Isaac, you've got a great cast, you've got great actors. I think they leaned in a lot, very, very heavily into the action aspect of this, and some of it was good, and some of it just didn't work for me. The shots that – I think the thing that sums up my feelings on this perfectly is when Layla becomes the superhero. I forget the name of her character's name. I think
it's Scarlet Scarab.
Scarlet Scarab, yeah. We see two hero shots of her. One is she sort of just comes out of a hole, and it's, you're like, okay, she looks cool, but this is kind of a waste of this hero moment. And then the next second, like Moon Knight's getting his ass kicked, and she comes in and saves him. I'm like, that's the hero shot we should have gotten. We could have cut a little bit of this out, and it would have gone a longer way. But I think they're trying to stretch every single shot they possibly can in this thing, and it was disappointing. But I do love the aspects of it that are shot in like the mental institute portion of it that's in his brain. You don't know that all that stuff I thought was really, really cool and unique. And if they do a second season of it, I hope they can come close to that weird vibe too, because we don't have anything like that in the MCU. And those are my thoughts on that.
Kevin Coelho.
I definitely agree with the boys that have gone so far. I was very excited for this series. I didn't know much about Moon Knight, so I was ready to like take it all in. The end of the first episode, there were moments where it was like, oh, that CG didn't look great. But like, and then I feel like my levels of excitement went down every episode. I think 5 was so radically different and kind of gave us hope that they were going to throw a curveball at us. And that is probably the best episode this series has. But it doesn't like save or make me want to like watch this ever again. Like, I'm in a place where it's like, if we don't ever get Moon Knight again, that's fine. I don't think that I'm going to watch. I mean, I'm not watching with Paula. It's over now. We could sit down and be like, hey, like it's, you know, but it just doesn't seem like there's any point. I didn't enjoy the story. I feel like the writing overall is very like, okay, cool. It's like this is the story of the series, and it's kind of going through this path. Like, there are cool little things thrown out that like I think that is really creative. Like the, you know, the desert looking like his little aquarium. And it's like, oh, cool, that's a nice little Easter egg. But it's like there's not a lot of substance on that show. I feel like they had a really cool thing that they could have gone with the story and really dove into, like, his him dealing with these three personalities, or later we found out there's a fourth. But they just I just don't
figure it.
Well, yeah, there's three, but there's also Khonshu as a different entity that they're like dealing with, you know. But yes, you're right. There's actually three personalities, not four. So just, yeah, overall it kind of felt like by the end I kind of dreaded watching it, and I knew that like I'll wake up in the morning and watch it before I go and do stuff.
Felt like a chore, him.
Yeah, it really did. And that's a bummer. I feel like we're now getting to a place where the MCU Disney Plus shows, I feel like there's more of them that haven't been great than there are great ones. And I think that that's a huge mistake, because like that's a great medium. Like WandaVision, none of us really enjoyed the way it ended, but we've seen now how it can build to something bigger. And I don't think this will. And that kind of bums me out. I hope I'm wrong. But even if I am wrong and this is building something bigger, it's like it doesn't make it a better story, you know?
Greg Miller.
Yeah, no, since Being a Dead Horse, I'm with everybody else. You know, I think not a day has gone by since we saw Multiverse of Madness that I haven't thought about that movie and been, what about this, or relive this moment, and yada, yada, yada. I have not thought about Moon Knight since the last Moon Knight review episode we did. I closed the book on it, walked away, and have not for a second been like, man, you know what I loved or hated or whatever about that show? This is the show that happened. I'm with everybody else. I wouldn't miss it if it didn't come back. If it does come back, I hope they nail it, because like Oscar Isaac is awesome. Ethan Hawke was awesome. But everything that happened in those six episodes, I was like, all right.
Tim. Yeah. Yeah. I struggle to say that I'm higher on this than you guys, but I'm definitely not as low as you are. But I think with that, this is my least favorite of the live action shows, I think by a fair margin. I appreciate a lot of things about it and what it did, and I love the characters that we got. Like by the end of it, I mean, from the get-go, I was in love with Stephen Grant, but by the end of it, I liked Mark Spector too, and I think that them together, as we see them in the final episode, I'm very excited to see them again in future projects. And the idea of how they treated the Jake Lockley thing and saving that for a post-credit reveal and kind of like what that means for the rest of the story so far, I think this is going to be one of the ones that ages better than it is right now, because what it is right now I think is kind of like very serviceable and fine. I don't think it does anything egregiously bad, but I struggle to think back to any high moments. I think all the highs in the show are more character based and pacing based in some ways. I did like how it kind of felt like three distinct thirds throughout the show, and ending episode four, committing to the last 15 minutes of it, setting up what we got in episode five, which I agree is the strongest high point of the series. I thought was really cool and a little innovative, and I haven't ever really seen that before, especially with shows that rely on the cliffhanger kind of narrative. I like that they delivered. I feel like they kind of over-delivered there, which kept me on my toes, but I wasn't really kept on my toes often throughout the show. I kind of, anytime that they were leading me down a path of like trying to think about what's going to happen, they answered it in ways that I thought were satisfying, but not exciting. And I, at this point, I do expect excitement out of MCU projects. And yeah, it's just kind of like, it's a bummer because there's so many things I really enjoy about this, and I just wanted them to kind of stick it a little harder than they did. The idea of Khonshu is awesome. I love the look. I love the vibe. There's ideas and concepts throughout this, like Tauret talking through the dead bodies to Layla. Cool. Like, that's fucking cool. And I feel like every episode had multiple moments like that are like, oh, that's fucking cool. That's fucking cool. But they're just little things that don't add up to being more and kind of like fulfilling the potential that something like Moon Knight has. But at the end of the day, I appreciate this swing and a miss over what we could have got from Moon Knight, which is a little bit more paint by numbers, and yeah, it's Batman, but it's Marvel, and I think that it was cool to not jump into it and have him be this crime fighting vigilante, and having that stuff kind of more told to us, and diving a little bit more into the character stuff of being right there with Steven and Mark as they're realizing their whole story. And I think all the background stuff, the back when they were kids and how it led to them being here, I thought that stuff was really strong. And I think that that's why I am excited to see these characters in future projects. But yeah, some stuff felt very earned and rushed at the same time. Like, I think Layla becoming the superhero was something that they definitely forecasted to us. But the way that it happens, kind of to Nick's point, it's a little anticlimactic and not as exciting as it should be, where it almost felt like that might have been a better thing in, if not a season two, a feature in another show. I don't know if we're going to get a season two of this, or if we're just going to get a different project that Moon Knight and co feature in, which at this point I think would be the stronger move. Yep. Andy Cortez.
With how good episode five was, like, there's a story in here. There's something to salvage in here. And I would love to see creators out there make a really dope edit of all of this sort of edited down, because there's a lot of fluff. There's a lot of added things that just weren't necessarily interesting or fun to watch, right? Like, there's just there are certain aspects where it's like, if you're not going to be interesting dialogue or story wise, at least give me something fun to look at. And, you know, we just didn't have that action wise. Like, this could have gone the route of, well, we don't have really much of a story to tell, so we're really going to just keep your eyes entertained with cool action set pieces. And there just wasn't a whole lot of that. Like, when I think about the final episode, I certainly didn't expect to see two giant beings fighting each other.
Slowly beating each other up over a pyramid.
And it just wasn't cool. Like, that should be a moment that you really sort of think about. And you know, in the grand scheme of Marvel, that's something we haven't seen a whole lot of, aside from, you know, Ant-Man growing large or something like that. But that, I don't know. It's just, it seems like such a larger than life moment that just was not portrayed in any interesting way, to the point where, again, while watching it, I thought, is this just like some sort of visual storytelling for an inner struggle? And it's like, oh no, those are actually two giant things happening. I thought it was like a background kind of, like, that fight is also happening in the background, but it's not real, but like, you're seeing it anyway. And it's just wild that there is so many elements here, I think, in the show to make it a really damn good show. And it just unfortunately missed a whole lot. And yeah, it's kind of a bummer.
I wanted to say I've kind of developed an issue with episode five, where it's like, after I watched episode six, of like, what's actually going on? Like,
it was confusing,
but in episode six, like, we see more of that weird world, and we know at Tom, it's like, oh, this is the afterworld, but I guess that was when he left that thing. The white asylum.
Yeah, I think the white asylum was supposed to be like purgatory, right? Where it was the holding place before he went to the ever
but
after calm.
It must have also been in his mind, because we had several characters in there that were in the real world. So, you know what I mean? Like, that's weird. It was, especially because Tomet sends him back in there to sort of shit out.
Towerette.
They got it. They know who I'm talking about.
I know, but you know comments are going to be like,
Andy, here's my secret. I've never read them.
Huh?
That's a superpower. He doesn't read.
There it is.
No, I'm with you on that one, Kevin. And that's the thing, too, is like, that's when I think about this movie reconceptualized as like a 2.5 hour long movie, the show reconceptualized as a 2.5 hour long movie, I think we would have gotten a lot more of that, and it could have been tighter. I keep coming back to this, where a lot of these series, I'm like, to Andy's point, there's so many good kernels of things that I wish they didn't feel the need to have to necessarily flesh out over six episodes. I think they'd be better if this was only a 2 hour, you know. I think this one actually would have worked better as a movie.
Yep, 100%.
I think it would have gotten, if they gave this $200 million like they gave Doctor Strange, I think that the treasure hunting aspects, the Indiana Jones aspects, the pyramid or the Tomb Raider aspects would have been really, really, really cool. But instead, they kind of came off a little bit hokey. And that fight at the end, you know, to Kevin's point, like, it just feels like it's something they can do, but they weren't sure if they should or not. But they're like, fuck it, throw it in there. We got to have something exciting, because, like I said, they kind of skipped the point where he beats the bad guy, because Jake shows up, and they, instead of having that be a wow moment, they're like, this is going to be a really cool twist at the end. And it wasn't a twist at the end, because we all saw it coming, because we already knew there was a third personality coming into here. So it's like, I wonder what their thought process was for a lot of these things, because to me, and obviously it's easier to to you know, be a backseat driver here. But, or Monday morning quarterback, I guess, would be the correct analogy. But to me, the aspects of this that I find that are really, really interesting are that is that struggle with what's going on with his multiple personalities and how that relates to his past trauma. And then, but, and we got a little bit less of that than I wanted to, because I think that's really, really the strong point of the show. The scenes with his mother, the scenes where he's running in the street, the scenes with his brother, that's all the emotional core of the story. Trying to have that, you know, I don't think he did a great job, or the creators did a great job with developing the relationship between him and Layla, or Steven and Layla. I think a lot of that kind of started falling. I just don't care about that toward the end of it. And they didn't
care about it from the start of
so,
it.
Yeah. And so it's just, it's unfortunate because this one was just a little bit of a miss.
See, I did care about it from the start of it, though.
Yeah, like, I screwed it up, actually. I was thinking about Mark. Sorry, I was too late. I wasn't my point. Go ahead.
Guys, yeah, like when we get that initial really fucking cool moment of, there's another cell phone here. Mark, what are you doing? Mark, who's Mark? I'm Steven. Like, what is going on here right now? This is cool as shit.
The intrigue I care about, but by the time they actually get to Layla, let me back up. It's not that I don't care about the relationship with him and Layla. It's that I care more about Mark's relationship to Steven and how that's going to rectify. And I think they should have spent a little bit more time on that. And we should have gotten, you know, I mean, again, I hate to keep coming back to it, but I think the benchmark for me is WandaVision and how they did all these things. That show was really just about the inner turmoil and the struggle. And they had a great actor in Elizabeth Olsen. They had a great supporting cast of Paul Bettany and Catherine Hahn. And they really just kind of knocked that out of the park for me. And of course, the big criticism we all had of that one was like, oh, the climax, the last episode, they didn't really stick it. Well, of course not, right? You have Catherine Hahn floating. You're like, I think I can see the strings. But we don't care because it was such a really, really cool story. And it went on to actually, I think, more serviceably set up Doctor Strange, the Multiverse of Madness. So I'm curious to see what they're going to do after this. But I hope they don't do it a second season. I hope he just pops up in a movie somewhere.
After rewatching WandaVision, can we just like all just, we don't have to talk about it. Obviously, we're not talking about WandaVision, but just the moment where like Vision's like, what's going on here, Wanda? And then Wanda starts the credits rolling and he's like, Wanda, talk. Like, oh, that's the coolest fucking moment. Like, that's a top 10 Marvel moment.
Honestly, like, let's just for a moment talk about WandaVision and like how like the ending isn't bad. It's just we were hoping for something much bigger.
I wanted Charles Xavier to come down.
I don't know. I understand that, Tim, you disagree. I just think that especially now, like seeing what it led to me, that all checks out and is dope. Like that, this is one of those things where like the movie, I think, makes the show even better.
I apologize to Tim. I said a public apology. I issued it out. I had all my PR team contact Tim's people and said, Tim, you're right. Like anytime we've gotten to the end of one of these Marvel rankings, I go, WandaVision way too high. After rewatching, I'm like, nah, it's a good fucking show. It deserves to be where it's at. I'm going to eat this half of the tomato, if you don't mind.
Where is it right now? Man. I'm looking. I'm trying to find. Oh, there it is. Number 10. Got it.
Number 10. But before we get to the plot and then our rankings and all that, let me tell you about our sponsors. Shout out to MeUndies for sponsoring this episode. You know those days when your coffee shop is out of cold brew and your air conditioner breaks and you try to go to the beach but there's zero parking spots? Yeah, life can be hard. Good thing MeUndies is here to help you take a break from the hardships of the world and give yourself a soft summer. Of course, I don't need to tell you. I got the MeUndies shirt. I got the MeUndies lounge pants. I'm wearing the MeUndies undies, the socks. Even my face mask is MeUndies. I absolutely love MeUndies and their soft micromodal fabric. And you're going to love it too. I absolutely guarantee it. With MeUndies light and breathable micromodal fabric, you can stay comfy and cool all summer long. They have super fun seasonal prints and tons of styles to choose from in sizes extra small all the way up to 4XL. MeUndies has a great offer for all of you. Any first-time purchasers, you can get 15% off. If you sign up for the free-to-join membership, you can apply that 15% off to their already discounted membership prices. To get 15% off your first order and 100% satisfaction guarantee, go to MeUndies.com/kindoffunny. That's MeUndies.com/kindoffunny.
funny. Shout out to Credit Karma for sponsoring this episode. Have you ever been rejected for a credit card? It happens way too often. That's why Credit Karma created Karma Confidence Technology, helping members apply with more confidence. Are you earning credit card rewards? Credit Karma can help you compare your rewards options so you can find a card that fits your lifestyle, helping you earn miles or cash back for spending money that you're going to spend anyways. Of course, I'm a huge fan of that. I love Credit Karma. One of my favorite features is how Credit Karma uses your credit data to show you your chances of approval before you even apply, which helps you apply with more confidence, and then it doesn't affect your credit score. Credit Karma uses your credit profile to show you offers that are tailored to your financial situation. They also partner with a wide range of card issuers, so you can be sure that you're exploring all sorts of options. I love Credit Karma. It's so easy to use. Fantastic stuff. Credit Karma, create your own karma. Ready to find the card for you? Head to Credit Karma and check out your personalized mix of offers today. Go to creditkarma.com or the Credit Karma app to find the card for you. That's creditkarma.com.
Andy Cortez, hit me with the song.
I didn't know we were doing the plot. For these shows, I thought we skipped. I don't know. Maybe that screencast. Yeah,
you got to start paying attention to the show. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the plot for WandaVision. No, it's not. It's Moon Knight.
You asked that question like 2 weeks ago. Don't say I got to pay. You asked the same thing like two weeks ago.
I know what I'm doing the plot, all right? Hey, go look under your bed. I think there's another tomato over there. All right.
The other half of the one you just put in your mouth.
No, it's right here.
You haven't joined us before for an MCU show in review. Remember, we now read off the Wikipedia, so we actually keep in the episode world and understand what's going on. So we start with episode one, The Goldfish Problem. Stephen Grant works at the British Museum in London, where he hopes to become a tour guide using his knowledge of ancient Egypt. After going to sleep one night, he wakes up in the Austrian Alps. I forgot about that. It witnesses a cult member meeting led by Arthur Harrow, who demands
the Hawk Watch.
There it is. When are we doing the Sunset Trilogy, Tim? Stop not giving the people what they want. Who demands this? Kevin, can you clear fucking comms for a second? This is a serious conversation.
Fuck off. What I need to know is,
are we ever really going to do the Sunset Trilogy, or should I watch it on my own? Because I do want to watch.
Watch it by your own. Myself. You suck. Don't even make Jen do it.
You're a fink.
I do want to say that, this is the funniest moment to me in the show. The entire show is him waking up in the grass field, being like, "What?" and waving up to the window, and then being like, "Oh, he's the bad guy. Shoot him." Hilarious. I still think about it every once in a while.
Arius. Led by Arthur Harrow, who demands a scarab Grant unknowingly has in his possession.
Jesus Christ.
As he attempts to escape, he has several blackouts and hears a mysterious voice in his head before waking up in his home. Grant realizes that 2 days have passed since he went to sleep. Remember, he's going to have that hot date. He finds a hidden phone and key card in his apartment and receives a call from the most frequent number in the phone's call log, a woman named Layla, who addresses him as Mark. The next day at work, Grant is confronted by Harrow, who reveals that he is a servant of the Egyptian goddess Amet. Grant escapes from Harrow, but is forced to remain at work that night. Yeah, why? That night on his own to make up for being late. Harrow summons a jackal-like creature to attack Grant, but his quote-unquote reflection asks to take control of their body. Grant agrees, transforming into a cloaked warrior who kills the jackal.
A lot of vibes here of just like somewhere there's not going to be a reflection, right? We're going to get to a spot where there's not a reflection.
I mean, you're going to go out in the middle of the desert. You're like, it's just sand. I don't know
how to do this. They'll have made up by that point, though, so they can actually talk to each other. They don't need a reflection, so it's all good. It's funny because I actually watched – I always watch these twice, and normally it's the first time at midnight and then the second time with G. And this last episode was the first time that I was like, I am not itching to rewatch this at all. So I waited till the last minute. We watched it last night together. And the sixth episode is the only one that I don't think got better the second time watching it. Like all the other ones I appreciated more, especially going back after more episodes had happened. And this first episode, I think, is a lot stronger after you see the rest of the episodes, of just the amount of little tidbits and lines of dialogue and things that they set up that end up coming to fruition later. Even just things like the date, where it's like, clearly it wasn't Steven or Mark that asked that woman on the date. It must have been Jake.
I was about to ask that question.
Because Steven has a wife and
Mark has a wife and Steven didn't know.
But they're estranged,
right? Yeah, they're estranged. He's cheating on her, right?
I think he's just trying to get away from her to keep her safe. Trying to keep her away to keep her safe. And then the way to keep her safe is to keep another woman in jeopardy. Keep Conchu guessing.
Does he love this woman? Who can I possess? I'm a bird. It's
crazy how good that accent is. You sound just like him.
Kevin, it's nice to get some positive reinforcement from you for once, and I appreciate it.
Sounds like water with a smother's cough.
Really? We think it was the other guy. We think it was the British version of him. All right. Episode 2 is Summon the Suit. Grant is blamed for the damage caused. Oh, yeah. Remember when he went back to work? Trying to, I guess I'll just
the man really likes his job, you know?
I hear you, man.
Such an achievable goal of being a tour guide.
But they're trying to hold him back, you know? They're afraid of him because he's got no people skills.
That was bullshit. He knew so much. He was so educated.
You know, it's one of the things you can be too educated. You know what I mean? He doesn't. Yeah. He's like too. All right, we get it. You understand hieroglyphics.
Overqualified for the job. Yeah.
Andy, I'm sorry.
Keep
side note,
stocking the shelves. God
Kevin,
damn it.
Calms clear for a second. This is serious shit. Andy, growing up, weren't hieroglyphics like the coolest fucking thing when you were a kid and you're learning about all this shit?
Cartouches and whatnot.
Yeah.
God, that was fucking cool. Grant is blamed for the damage caused by the jackal creature due to it not appearing in the museum's security cameras. I remember that being funny. And he's fired. He uses the key card to access the storage locker where he finds the scarab. He speaks with his quote-unquote reflection, another identity in Grant's body that introduces himself as American mercenary Mark Spector, the current avatar of the Egyptian moon god Khonshu. Grant is confronted by Layla, Spector's wife, who is unaware of Grant's existence. Before being arrested by police officers working for Harrow, Harrow reveals that he was Khonshu's previous avatar until he chose instead to follow Amit. This is a great scene. I remember this being cool. He explains that he wants to use the scarab to find Amit's tomb and resurrect her so she can purge humanity of evil by wiping out everyone who has or will commit evil deeds. Layla rescues Grant, but Harrow summons another jackal creature. Grant, this is... I love these motherfuckers. Grant manages to summon a suit of his own to fight the jackal, but is overpowered and allows Spectre to take control. Spectre kills the jackal, but loses the scarab to Harrow. Khonshu threatens to claim Layla as his next avatar if Spectre fails to stop Harrow.
I was hit or miss on like the different types of suits and whether or not I liked them, but by the last episode I did, and I, especially because of the fight scene of them down that alleyway where they're switching between the two different suits. I thought that was really, really dope, and I liked them making the Mr. Knight suit go for Steven and like kind of just associating the different outfits with the different identities. I thought was a good change from the comics.
What do you think Jake's outfit's going to be? 50s biker?
I don't know. You nailed it.
I hope it's just some board shorts. No, I already did that. Maybe again. Like a sleeveless shirt.
He just
maybe
goes
some sandals.
Surfer. And he's like a Speedo. <That's>
it. Just looks like Captain Carter, you know, because he's British.
Was Jake British or New York?
No, he was like Mexican. He spoke Spanish.
Oh, yeah, at the end, yeah. Spanish.
You only hear him talk twice, and I swear to God, during the part where he's like being interrogated by Ethan Hawke in the asylum, I thought he had a New York accent.
It's the most New York thing ever.
That might have been Mark. Yeah. I don't know.
No. It was definitely Jake. It was Jake.
Oh, okay.
Well, at the end, it's supposed to be New York.
Okay.
Why was he speaks English Spanish at the end?
Because apparently that was his decision.
At the very end?
I thought he spoke Spanish at the end.
His final line was Spanish, and that was apparently Oscar Isaac's idea. Like, he improv'd that, and they were like, keep it.
That's confusing.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've officially met once. Yeah, it's confusing to have him speak another language. And be like, no, he's from New York. Right?
It's very strange. But
not
whatever.
That New Yorkers can't speak two languages, I'm aware.
But like, you'd think he'd be speaking Spanish the whole time.
Yeah,
you know
that would have been. I mean, I'm just saying, based on the cues we're giving the audience to let you know this is the same person we saw before, I might want to keep the New York accent.
Yeah.
But whatever.
Episode 3, The Friendly Type. Harrow and his followers discover the location of Ahmet's tomb in the Egyptian desert. In Cairo, Spectre and Grant both experience blackouts while tracking a lead to Harrow's location. After failing to gain information, Khonshu calls a council between his fellow Egyptian gods and their avatars to warn them of Harrow's plans. But Harrow successfully denies the accusation.
Just idiots.
Based on no fucking evidence. I'm just out in the middle of the desert with a bunch of people. Don't worry about it. This guy really sucks. I'm sorry. Do you suck? No, I don't. Well, we don't believe you suck.
I feel like it's these big logical jumps that are the things that make it feel like
they're at the core of the
story. Yeah.
Well, they take the tension away, right? Because if you can't trust that these gods don't understand what's going on here, you're like, why should I care if they don't even care? You know?
I have a question for the panel here.
Go for it.
More importantly for Greg Miller, this photo. Why did you just slack me a photo of what seems to be a fox maybe gripping the throat of a small deer or something?
Why did this to help educate you that that's a jackal?
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
We've been talking a lot about jackals here. So I figured
a lot of jackal talk, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I feel like with this whole bit, this is when they really
Nick, I'll send it to you, too. I'm sorry, Tim. Clear comms. Nick, I'm going to send you the jackal photos.
I hate this new clear comms thing. I just want to make that absolutely clear.
You can tell that Greg just did a professional shoot somewhere because he got that term back in his vernacular.
I think this is where it really started having to do the heavy lifting of a lot of the more kind of mythological side of all the stuff and setting up the world of the gods and the avatars and all that stuff and where Harrow's kind of plan falls into it all. And I like Ethan Hawke as a bad guy in this, and like especially great. As it gets to the end, like when we get to the very end of it and he clearly is like, I defer to you, God. Like you I am actually everything I said I was doing it for the right reasons. Like it is actually, I will sacrifice whatever. I like all that stuff. Obviously don't really like him legitimately fighting, like fist fighting Moon Knight. I thought that was stupid, but this kind of bit is to Kevin's point where it starts getting murky and a little messy, and like I feel like they overcomplicated it to get to the idea that Layla eventually was going to also be an avatar, and that Mark and Steven were going to give up the avatar Khonshu stuff, and it was going to be the third personality. So they had to do all this. I really just wish they did it in a better way, because adding all these other gods, I think, really did a disservice to the show, to the pacing of it, and just to our clarity of like what's going on and why are they acting this way.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Because remember, we left this episode going, and at least I did, and we talked about it on the show, but like, oh, is that one guy in on it with Harrow? Is that why he wasn't doing this? Like, because clearly they wouldn't be this stupid. They want to just take the complete lack of evidence on either side. Well, let's hear your story. Well, I'm sorry, you have mental issues or whatever. You have multiple personalities you can't control. We won't listen to you. Like, what? That's all it took?
Yeah.
Sucks. Back to the Wikipedia recap. Hathor's avatar, Yatzel, tells Spectre to find the sarcophagus of a Magi. I should not say it. How do you say it?
I'm just expecting every word to have that question mark at the end.
Yeah. I remember the God, they talk about this in the Mummy.
I'm like, I don't understand what these words are.
Med J. Thanks for all your help, you fucking jackals. That's why I said you the goddamn it. Who knew the Magi, location right? of Med Magi? Magi, that's it. Kevin, thank you. You get a gold star. Tim, please send Kevin a gold star.
Gifted the Magi.
Layla finds Spectre and takes him to meet with Anton Mogart, an acquaintance who owns the sarcophagus. Harrow arrives to destroy it and destroys it, forcing Spectre, Grant, and Layla to fight off Morgat's men and escape the desert. Remember this fucking scene? Jesus Christ, that was worthless. Grant assembles some of the sarcophagus fragments into a star map, but it is 2,000 years out of date. Khonshu uses his powers to briefly turn back the night sky, turn back time to the correct night.
Allowing this was Grant one of the high Layla. Moments.
Yeah, this visual was gorgeous. It was cool.
Allowing Grant and Layla to find Amit's tomb. The other gods imprison Khonshu in the piece of stone for this, leaving Grant and Spectre's body without Khonshu's powers. Number four of the tomb. Grant and Layla find a deserted campsite at the location of Amit's tomb, which is a maze in the shape of the Eye of Horus. They discover that some of Harrow's men have been killed by undead Egyptian priests, who then attack Grant and Layla. Yeah, exactly. This is where we really felt the mummy vibes.
And this this went nowhere.
Yeah, like, it's funny. I totally forgot about this.
It's such a weird element to throw in, because I thought that whatever they're introducing to us here will kind of be one of the main obstacles they have to get by for the rest of the show.
Like, you imagine him fighting a horde of these things to get to Ethan Hawke's character before he can summon the last little bit of power he needs for Amit. But no, we just kind of killed one and that was it.
Just like it just felt like a demo episode for like, here's what our mummy could be, you know, if you want to see like a screen test, you know.
Yeah, what's kind of wild is they kill one of them, right? But we see two of them at one point.
There's another
one
down there somewhere getting Burger King or whatever.
But it was just murdering these other people. I guess maybe they shot it. Because, I mean, she was able to physically kill it.
Well, that was a criticism I had when we talked about this episode. When we did the interviews. I was like, it seemed like these things were supposed to be a really ominous presence in this environment, but then we just kind of forget about them because the other guys are like, they're fine. We got guns instead. But that's the problem, is like when a gun can overcome these things, they're not as scary as the guys with the guns. And the guys with the guns aren't that scary.
It was a scary episode. Like that initial lead up to having like that sort of stealth suspense moment where she's hiding behind the table and suddenly this dude is being cut open and like just burst into by this monster. All of that was so cool, and I was just hoping to get more of those moments or more of whatever these enemies are. And it just felt like sort of, here's a side episode. Here's an episode of Star Trek where we go visit this one planet. There's mummy monsters there, and that episode's done with. Now let's get back to like our main mission. It just felt really weird.
Strange New World, liking it. This is where I wish this was a movie, right? This is where I wish this was the mummy movie, because the moments in the mummy when they go into the tombs are just, it's so fun, and it seems like it's this big grand thing and all that stuff. And I wish they had the budget for that in this one, or that's what this was all about. Greg the Jackal Miller.
Nick, thanks, Jackal number two. What's Rachel Weisz up to these days?
Daniel Craig, right?
Yeah, I think she's still married to Daniel Craig.
She's married to that squad. Yeah, she was in the Black Widow, so she's been in the MCU, but she's doing other movies. She's still out there doing things?
Yeah, I'm sure she is. I'm sure she's
having Coelho Gold Star of the Day. What do you got from her?
I think we should start a campaign to bring back the Mummy before Mummy 2. Or not before Mummy 2, after Mummy 2. Get rid of Mummy 2.
Before Mummy 2, and let me tell you why. Because he had the kids in Mummy 2, and I was like,
yeah, it was fine. Yeah. But here's the thing. Let's do a fucking Monsters universe that you know Universal is fucking itching for. Let's anchor it with Tom Cruise. Yeah, but like, fuck that. We didn't like that. Guess what we did like? Brendan Fraser in The Mummy. Rachel Weisz in The Mummy. Start it again. Make it their movie. And let's do this. You know what I mean?
Kevin, hear me out on this one. I want to hear this one out. I like where your head's at. I like where your lips are at there. What if, rather than make a sequel to number one, if we don't do it again, though, please. What if, rather than make a sequel to number one, please stop. We just reboot it. What if we just reboot? We put somebody else in there.
That's what they did.
I'm taking a risk right here.
I don't mean, I'm not saying we're going to do the Dark Universe Tom Cruise shit. I'm saying we're rebooting and like trying to make the Mummy again.
No, I want more of them. And a bigger universe. They can
I'm
do
out
it.
On the limb right now. I'm out on the
do
limb.
It, do it. I'll catch
on
you.
A limb, everybody.
I'm right here.
Little unknown actor by the name of Chris Pratt.
Oh, Jesus.
Sign it up. Three picture deal.
I'm on a limb.
Layla defeats the priests, but encounters Harrow, who claims that Spectre was one of the mercenaries who murdered her archaeologist father. Grant finds the tomb and discovers that Amet's last avatar was Alexander the Great. He retrieves Amet's, from inside Alexander's body. Sorry, go ahead.
No. I said first, then I was like, wait, you're right. It was the last one. Stupid.
Layla angrily confronts Spectre, who reveals that his partner killed Layla's father and Spectre himself before Khonshu revives Spectre as his avatar. All this just nonsense backstory. Harrow arrives and shoots Spectre, who wakes up in a psychiatric hospital populated by people from his life. Awesome twist. This is when this episode got really good.
And also the statue guy, if you remember the silver statue man, he was in there too.
Yeah, that's one of the characters from his life.
That was another thing of like, there was setup for that just didn't go anywhere. He was just some random guy
the gold guy, yeah.
Yeah, not Mark. What's the other one's name?
Steven.
Steven would go up to and just have weird conversations with.
I thought that guy was going to be a god. I thought he was going to be like an avatar for another god, like the god of statues or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Clash the god of statues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, that would have been helpful. That would have been good.
God of Marvel.
After escaping from Harrow, who appears as the therapist at the hospital, Spectre finds Grant in a separate body trapped in a sarcophagus. They also see a second sarcophagus with someone else trapped inside before being greeted by a female hippopotamus-headed figure. Gold Star of the Day, Kevin Coelho.
I had a question about jackals.
Yeah.
Why is it that Anubis is like a black jackal? Because like when I Google jackal, they're all like tan-colored. So do they come in the black variety and then like Google Images is just being a dick about showing us that?
Is jackal the actual animal? Or is that not a pejorative?
No, a jackal is an animal.
It's an animal. It's a type of like...
Kind of looks like a fox. Somewhere between
a wolf. Yeah, a wolf and...
No, I'm seeing this photo that Greg sent.
A coyote.
It's very cute.
Yeah.
Yo, jackals are pretty fucking sick, man. Like,
yeah, it looks like a coyote.
If you look up black jackal...
Well, that's what I'm about to do.
Blackal.
Nice day for a black jackal.
I'm gonna send
I'm gonna send assets. Funny. This one's not actually black. It's just called the Black Backed Jackal. But like, tell me this isn't the dopest action
picture.
Say that
three times fast.
God, wait, where are you sending those assets?
Fucked.
I mean, that's
nice day to start again.
Yeah. Shit.
Yeah, but I mean, are they not black? Is like Anubis?
He's got like the black on the back of it.
No, Nick, know. You know what I'm saying. Like that's
yeah,
a,
no,
that's
a, he's a, like he looks like a puma. You know what I mean? That's what Anubis is like, dark. A puma.
God. Why do you have to say it that way?
Like, we just been, like the Egyptians have been lying to us the whole time? That's
I
fucked
think so,
up.
Man.
There are black jackals, though. I'm looking at one right now.
if we can clear comms for 1 second. Andy, what I want you to know is I've been trying to settle down. And I've just been unable to, but I really wanted to try to say with a straight face that one time my friend professed his love on a plane to a girl with the help of Billy Idol.
Oh, you mean like at the end of weddings?
Weddings? I was waiting for somebody to catch me on it. If I could have gotten through and told
you immediately on that, Greg, that would have not gone.
You would have thought for a second if Poe did it. You would have thought.
No fucking way Poe knows Billy Idol.
He's on a plane. You don't know everybody on a plane.
What a Poe don't know.
After that, you don't fucking know Billy Idol. You know what I mean? Like, you don't think the first thing I would tell everyone is like, oh, man. Oh, nice to meet you. I met fucking Billy Idol when I got married. That's what I would say.
Number one fact, dude.
Yes, that's true. I met Billy Idol.
I saw anyway, it over at the airport that one time, and I still talk about it. So, yeah, you're right. No, which that checks out. That checks out.
I still talk about it.
Layla Angley confronts Spectre, reveals that his partner killed Layla's father. Oh, I already did this part. Even this fucking description's forgettable. Spectre finds Granis ever. Oh, I already did it. I finished. Yeah, and then the hippo shows up at the end. Tau wet.
She goes, hello.
I thought Tyrette was good. That actor was going to grow on me. I by the end of it, I'm like, I don't like her at all. Don't like it when they I think it's supposed to add the tension, but when the dead bodies comically pop up and say something and then die again, I'm like, wow, they did that. Somebody said that was okay to put on screen.
That was cool as hell.
No, I'm more like with Nick, it where it's like, I don't shit. Know. Yeah,
I liked it.
The and then when she, unfortunately, when they made the actress that plays Layla do that live action, where she's like, oh, walking down the hallway.
No.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that
bad.
Was another moment of like, Jesus.
It was so cringy.
A director saw this and was like, yeah. That's what I want to see.
This is the take
I want
to go with. Don't bother. Like, normally, if you do that, you change the angle of the camera just a little bit to tell the audience, hey, this is a new person. But no, they just let her act down that hallway. And man, I would not be surprised if they're like, we have time for one take. Let's just, and she's like, this is what I'm giving you. I'm going to my trailer now.
And then the next scene we have is her in her, like, scarab outfit, right? The Red Scarab or whatever, Scarlet Scarab.
After that,
so I kind of feel like that's why we don't talk about that as much. It's like the next scene was cool, you know.
And the Scarab outfit looks awesome, and she looks great in it. Like she looks like a fucking superhero for sure. But the moments leading up to that, I was like, I kind of want to turn this off right now and go laugh outside. And then I want one of my neighbors to be like, why are you laughing? I'm like, oh, let me show you. And I'll show you this terrible
thing. Come inside.
Come in.
Come on.
No, it's all right. 1 a.m. and you're standing in the middle of this hallway laughing hysterically.
That's not the weirdest thing my neighbors have seen me do. Let's put it that way.
Oh, God. Number five, Asylum. The hippopotamus-headed woman is the Egyptian goddess Tawet, who explains that Spectre and Grant are dead, and the psychiatric hospital is a boat sailing through the Duat, I forget if that's right, the Egyptian afterlife. She weighs their hearts on the scales of justice to determine whether they can enter the field of reeds, but the hearts are imbalanced by hidden memories that she suggests they explore together. Grant sees a memory of Spectre's younger brother, Randall, drowning and Spectre's mother blaming him for it. While Spectre shows Grant how he became Khonshu's avatar while on a mission with his partner, Bushman, who murdered Layla's father, Spectre and Grant convince Tawet to help them return to living world so they can stop Haro, and she steers the boat towards the gates of Osiris. Spectre reluctantly explains that he unknowingly created Grant as a result of their mother's abuse. Grant and Spectre reconcile with each other, but their scales fail to balance. And hostile spirits attack.
This guy's yawning in the middle of the fucking.
This is the best episode of the show. Okay. Dragging Grant into the Duat, where he turns into sand. The scales balance, and Spectre finds himself in the field of reeds. This is a great episode.
Here's the thing: if Mark had been like, "Hey Grant, can you go back in the
sarcophagus?"
Then he could have gone out there and been like, "It's fine. I packed him up. He's locked up in the room. Wait again. I'm all good." You know?
Well, it worked out, though, because in the next episode, he just goes back to him, and I guess they reconcile. like he reconciles the fact that he made him. I was kind of unclear as to how they got out of the sand and didn't become sand together, but
I think that was the moment that the doors open and let him. They were brought back because Khonshu had come back to life. And
also makes a Tawaret, old lady T.
Mm-hmm. Old lady T.
She mentions to whoever's controlling the door. Greg mentioned it earlier at the start of that.
Osiris.
She's like, oh, you fucking cheeky Osiris. You're opening the doors for them. Like, she kind of makes a point to be like, you're allowing them back in. Good on you. You know,
well, that like, was because his avatar had gotten like shot at that point, right? Or killed.
Right.
Like, oh, okay. I see that this guy
suddenly fine. They're not incompetent.
Yeah, suddenly he's like, you know what? That Mark guy might have had a point. I think I can see what's going on here now, finally.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this goes back to what I was saying about like them adding all the mythology stuff where it's like a lot of it was told to us instead of showing it. And then when they show it, it seems weird. And I didn't like it. Like, I didn't like how he was in the field of reeds. And then this is the next episode. But when he does walk back and it turns back into the sands, like just the way all that shit's dealt with, it's like, yeah, you told me how this makes sense. So it does make sense. But it's really weird and not really engaging at all. And I didn't like random like rises in tension for no reason. Like when Tawaret like takes the boat and like the sand is kind of like waving towards them, and she like cuts it off. It's like, why did you do any of that? Like, it just kind of felt like just kind of action for action's sake, giving them something to need to run. And it was like, we definitely didn't need that.
Same with the like sand zombies that were coming out to pull them down, where it's like, all right, this is.
Well, we needed to show Steven that he could fight as well. That's what that was for. Mm. Like, I agree, Kevin. I didn't think it was particularly awesome, but they needed some justification to show him at the end and be like, hey, Layla, look at my new weapons and such, you know, and he's like, I got this. I can't wait to show you what kind of moves I got. And let me show you two things. I whack a dude with a stick. I whack a dude with another stick.
Whack a dude.
Let's make these fights more visually interesting, man. Like, come on, dude. It's a cool character.
Number six.
Anyway.
Gods and monsters. Harrow frees Amit, and kills the avatars of the other Egyptian gods. Layla finds Khonshu's rock thing and releases him. Spectre refuses to stay in the field of reeds and returns to the Duat to rescue Grant with old lady T's help. They escape through the gates of Osiris and awaken in their body. Khonshu rebonds with them, restoring their powers. Layla discovers that Amit can be rebound by multiple avatars and agrees to become the temporary avatar of Old Lady T. They join Spectre, Grant, and Khonshu in fighting Harrow and Amit. Harrow overpowers Spectre and Grant, but they experience a blackout, during which time they somehow defeat Harrow. Fucking A. Spectre and Layla.
I love that. I think that's cool.
No, this scene like sucked, and it seemed like such an easy cop out to like, because they were losing and it's like, oh no, don't worry, there's clearly another thing, and it's like, all right, cool, that sucks.
It's again, it's one of those things where like there's a buildup coming, and as they started losing, my first thought was, oh cool, we're finally gonna get to see this other third character, and like, what's it gonna look like? This guy's hyper violent, and it got me excited, and then it cuts, and then Layla's like, what just happened? And he's like, I don't know, and she's like, cool, well, we won. So it's okay.
See, I like it because I like where it leaves us off, where we have the characters of the duel of Steven and Mark, who are now kind of working together, and then their enemy is now themselves, and they just don't know that. And I think that that is way more interesting than just the, hey, yeah, here's the guy that's violent, and we're seeing the fight scene. Like, again, it's weird not knowing when we're going to see them next and all that, but I think that this is a much tighter story and more interesting than just the obvious.
I don't know. I think Nick's right on like that being, that would be a great introduction to it, like a new character.
After all just, the teases.
Yeah, if his eyes go white, like he does, switching between personalities.
And all of a sudden
he's just fucking, like it's a really well choreographed fight. Because like he doesn't have the accent or then, and then his eyes just go white and then we have that same moment of him being like, you know, Steven and him being like, Mark, that was, neither of us was, us, and I think that could have still played out really well.
I totally see where you're coming from though, Tim. I just think that with every sort of reveal, more and more could have been revealed, and each reveal could have been more and more like educational for the audience, as opposed to like, we're still keeping this a mystery so that the post-credit scene can get you know, comic fans excited. But I think that each reveal could have been more and more to the point where we would have seen the whole fight scene. Us think that maybe it's either Mark or Steven. Obviously, like, if you've been watching the show, you understand that it's neither of them. But then they both wake up and like, what the fuck was that? I don't know. But like, that same reveal is the same as all the other times that he kind of blinks out and it's everybody's dead. Like, we've already seen that happen.
Exactly. I thought we were going to get a payoff for that. And I disagree a little bit because I think that seeing the violence of this guy would have, I think, strengthened that twist. Because the twist wasn't that there's a third person. We all kind of saw that coming. The twist was that he's still beholden to Khonshu. He's still a servant of Khonshu. So he doesn't need Mark or Steven to be on board with this because he has a third person. He outsmarted them. And I think it would have been even more intense and kind of ominous and foreboding if we had seen how destructive Jake is beforehand. But instead, we just sort of get the aftermath of it, which, I don't know, it's not, it's another Spanish. One of those. Yeah, I mean, he speaks Spanish, but also I would have loved to have seen, and they were being very overpowered by Harrow at that point. And so it's kind of weird, but.
I think it's the final episode. It's the finale. It would have been cool to see what this other guy is. That's been teased already that he's so destructive and so badass. Yeah. I would like to see him be badass.
Yeah, I mean, final thing I want to say on this is just I think that they did a wise call of focusing on the two identities for this and not overdoing it, because I think that it allowed them to, especially by the end, work together as a force. And I think that having this other obvious third thing out there that you don't need the post-credit scene to know exists, like, I love that they our protagonist is still totally not in control of it, and there is another factor out there that has been there the entire time in every single episode. And I think that that needs a lot more than the time that they had in this show to be able to get into a third identity to be as fleshed out as we got Mark and Steven in this.
Mark.
I hear you, but I just don't think that like showing him here takes away from that. I mean, we still know there's a third identity we didn't get into. It just would have been cool to see him beat the shit out of some people. Spectre and Layla seal him in Hera's body, imprisoning her and Khonshu urges. Let me try this again. Spectre and Layla seal Ahmet in Hera's body, imprisoning her. And Khonshu urges Spectre to execute Hera and Ahmet. Spectre refuses and orders Khonshu to release him and Grant from their service. The pair find themselves in the hospital, where they reject the vision and choose to continue their new life together as heroes. In a mid-credit scene, Hera is killed by Jake Lockley, Spectre and Grant's third alter, who is still working for Khonshu. Moon Knight. Khonshu.
Love Khonshu in the suit. Looking dope as fuck. Andy, hit me with haiku and review.
Tim, I'm glad you're bringing that up right now, because usually now is the time for us to do such a thing. Were we to have time. A sort of side segment
set up segment.
Like a podcast. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I'll just begin right now, right? If that's cool with you all.
Yeah, that's cool with me. Right.
Whenever you're ready, Andy. Whenever you're ready.
No rush.
Seven syllables in the middle. You'll need five for the first and last line. If it's not poetic, no need to fret it. Haikus don't need to rhyme.
Yeah, don't need to rhyme.
Haiku in review. Haiku in review.
You can go to patreon.com/kindoffunny to write your review in haiku form, just like Mr. Hawks 182 did. Steven Grant is Mark. Mark Spector, Steven Grant. Who the fuck is Jake? Who the fuck is Jake? Indeed. Jizzle Dupes in the chat.
Great name. I love that name.
Just goddamn shout out to Jizzle Dupes for sure. Brings up an interesting point here. No wigs or abs in this show. Now, Nick, like, I've got to put this through the. Oh, I don't even.
Andy, give me the song.
I'm not even going to say what I was going to say.
The Nick barometer of the
ringer. What were we going to say? Give me a hint of what it was, Tim.
I honestly don't even want.
We saw some open chest moments of Oscar Isaac.
Did I?
Yeah,
we did. But overall, Andy, give me the song. Give me the song, Andy.
Were they born in labs? Now it's time to ring those abs.
No abs, everybody.
No contest.
Audio listeners, all right, you gotta come watch the YouTube video to see what Nick just did. It was funny.
Yeah, it was so funny.
I didn't see it. That was very good.
Missed out, Andy.
Gotta give us a view, I guess.
I thought I disconnected from Discord. I was like, look at her.
So there we go. Yeah, no abs for you. But now it's time for Ragu Bagu.
Ragu.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Rad Guys Talk Bad Guys, the podcast within a podcast where we rank all the villains in the MCU. We are currently looking to rank our 46th villain, Khonshu and Haru, or Haro and Khonshu, or just Haro. Haro? Okay.
Haro
and
Khonshu.
Okay. Haro. Like a wheelbarrow. Haro.
Exactly.
Got it. So as you know, we now operate in a tiered system, saying if this villain is an S tier, A tier, B tier, C tier, or DC or F tier.
Uh-huh.
Oh my god, where do we want to rank Khonshu and Wheelbarrow Hero?
Can we hear Kevin, what D tier is?
Sure, Kevin. The D tier. I might be having a stroke today. The D tier starts with number 29, the Vision from Solo.
Yeah.
Number 30, the Mandarin / Aldrich from Iron Man 3. Number 31, Obadiah Stane from Iron Man. Number 32, Franco Malfoy and Taskmaster from Black Widow. Number 33, Loki and Thor. And then 34, the Flag Smashers / John Walker in Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
See, I put him pretty high on this on this list because I think Ethan Hawke did a really good job just kind of carrying most of the scenes that he was in.
Ethan Hawke, great actor for sure.
Yeah.
Good villain. Also, you know what I feel about, you know what I like about Ethan Hawke? Never fixed his teeth. Very character driven teeth. You ever notice that?
No.
When he was dead, he had that one tooth that was sticking out.
Very character driven teeth.
Yeah, very charismatic teeth. He's got, you know, a lot of people, they put the veneers in. They do the Ben Affleck. Where it's like,
Affleck, come on, man.
And it's like, get out of here.
Picture Nick at like the casting table being like, you know, I like that actor. Very, very character driven teeth.
What I meant to say was his teeth have a lot of character. But I
feel like so Kevin, you're thinking it's a D tier? He's a D tier villain?
Picture back on.
Yeah, I mean, I personally, I throw it somewhere in the middle of there.
Nick,
I
think you're saying he's a D tier villain as well?
I think yeah,
Andy, Tim, do you have disagreements on where what the tier system of where we're putting Khonshu?
Yeah, I definitely think it's higher than D. The D tier villains are pretty damn bad.
Would you like to hear the C tier villains?
Obadiah Stane's great.
Would you like to hear the C tier?
Yes, C tier. Yes.
Well, remember, we're talking performance and motivations. So this is not at all a front to the one and only Jeff Bridges and Obadiah Stane, who will live on forever. Hooray! C tier looks like this. It starts in number 22, the Kree and Jude Law in Captain Marvel. Number 23, Francis Angel Deadpool in Deadpool. Number 24, Red Skull in Captain America, the First Avenger. Number 25, Rockwell and Mickey in Iron Man 2. Number 26, The Dink and the Sentinels in X-Men Days of Future Past. Number 27, Magneto and the Brotherhood in X-Men. Number 28, Mass / Dormammu in Doctor Strange.
No shot anybody goes above Sam Rockwell.
I can't believe that the Dink is so high.
I don't know.
We loved him. Great performance.
But it's also the motivation,
bottom of C. And it's because of a couple things like Rockwell. Like, I do think that I would actually put it above, like, bottom of or top of C, because I really didn't like Jude Ladd, as it's written here in Captain Marvel.
Listen, there was when this was a simpler time, we said whatever we put into my little note app would be how it would be.
Collectively say that? Were all of us a part of that decision?
Nick, here's what I want you to know. I was the only one doing any fucking work while you laid over there in your boxer shorts. All right. Those fucking legs. So what I want you to do, Poindexter, is sit the fuck back down and let Daddy talk to
you. You're not wrong, Daddy. You're not wrong.
Oh, I hate that. I hate this.
Anyways, I'm slowly correcting as we go. You can see I've now changed it to Jude Law. Calm down.
I would put this, I mean, I just think Rockwell and Mickey are, as much as I enjoy Ethan Hawke's performance, Hawkwatch, I like the entertainment factor a lot more of Sam Rockwell and my port.
I would agree. I mean, the thing for me is Ethan Hawke started so strongly, but by the end I'm like, ugh. Like, I'm always a sucker for an altruistic villain that believe, like, you're like, oh, I could see why he's trying to do what he's trying to do. But by the end of it, I'm like, I don't know, man. The two giant gods fighting over the pyramid, and you're like, I don't care about that. And then he just gets clowned out by something we don't even get to see. I'm like, what a loser. Put him at the bottom of
personally, I would throw my vote at putting these two even though I love Ethan Hawke, but you know, Ethan Hawke is a great example to Greg Miller of the D tier villains. A great performance, a great actor, and just not that interesting of a dude overall. So yeah. I'd put him at number 29 because I like Mads and Dormammu more, who end the C bracket, and I don't remember the Vision from Solo at all. So I'd put him there.
I mean, I still think we should take out all the non MCU. Villains
Kevin.
In here, like
Kevin, clear comms. Nobody Solo. Cares what you want. All right. When I was building this list on my phone, you were laying over there. Your boxers stroking every
that with me.
Greg, I'd like to remind you. I hold a list myself in my pocket, and if we ever get back to whatever movies that we were doing there,
Kevin, let's hear from the Hawk.
Nope.
He just sounds like he's farted.
But like
a real silent fart.
Quiet?
Is one of the it sounded like when you try to sneak a fart out and then someone just catches the tail end of it. You're like that just farted.
I needed a third judge on Kevin asking to clear the list. Can we hear it, Hawk?
There it is.
There it is. Yeah. It says no. It says no,
Kevin. Yeah. I stand with C. I stand with bottom of C.
I vote D.
I vote D as well.
Bottom of C.
Oh, Nick, it's you.
I'll go bottom of C.
You're a piece of garbage. So you want to put him then still at number 29, I guess, but it, rather than be top of D, he's the bottom of C?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. I'll live with that. So now then, ladies and gentlemen, sorry.
I'll go for it.
Okay. So recapping your C's then, you have Jude Law, Captain Marvel, Angel and Francis from Deadpool, Red Skull from Captain America, Sam and Mickey from Iron Man 2, the Dink from Future Past, Magneto from X-Men, Mads and Dormammu from Doctor Strange, and now your new number 29 and bottom of the C list, Ethan Hawke and Khonshu from this movie show.
Perfect.
Moon Knight. Now it's time to rank the Marvel Cinematic Universe. We have 32 entries, and we're about to make it 33. Currently, number one is Endgame. Number two, Infinity War. Number three, No Way Home. Number four, Homecoming. Number five, Civil War. Number six, Ragnarok. Number seven, Winter Soldier. Number eight, Guardians 2. 9, Loki. 10, WandaVision. 11, Avengers. 12, Guardians 1. 13, Shang-Chi. 14, Iron Man. 15, Far From Home. 16, Black Panther. 17, Doctor Strange. 18, Hawkeye. 19, Falcon and Winter Soldier. 20, Captain Marvel. 21, Ant-Man and the Wasp. 22, Ant-Man. 23, Black Widow. 24, Iron Man 2. 25, Age of Ultron. 26, First Avenger. 27, Iron Man 3. 28, Eternals. 29, Nick. 30 Hulk, 31 Thor, and 32 Thor, The Dark World.
Did I mess up the list?
Yeah, this list is different.
Unless you put Multiverse of Madness in there, Tim.
Yeah, it's up to 18.
Multiverse of Madness is 18. There you go. Yeah. I don't know what I was reading. It.
No worries.
Yeah. I just downloaded one.
May I start?
You may, Kevin.
Start the bidding.
I didn't like this. I've been very clear about that. And I honestly, I would put this right above What If under Eternals. Oof,
Kevin. Yeah. I was just going to say right under What If because y'all know I love What If.
Nicholas, God, I'm with you under What If. A 31 for Moon Knight. The motion passes. Clear comms end the show.
I'm with you, baby. Right above What If. Right under Eternals.
Andy, you're the deciding vote.
Andy, remember Captain What If. Carter.
Get the fuck out of here, baby.
Such shit takes from this company. All right.
So here we have number 28 is Iron Man 3, number 29 Eternals, number 30 What If, number 31 Moon Knight, number 32 Hulk, 33 Thor, and 34 Thor The Dark World. Thor. So there you go.
I feel like that movie had the least amount of like, or show had the least amount of play between us, where like we were shooting like one spot lower than the other. It was really close.
That's as close. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. That's as close to unanimous as we're ever going to get at this point. I'm proud of us.
Yeah, that is very, very damn
true. It's a big deal.
This is a big deal. It took Moon Knight to unite us. But
you look at our Pixar list, Tim. It's like two people thought it was top five, three people thought it was bottom five, and it was like that for every fucking movie.
Yeah, that is so true. When are we going to return to the MCU in review? That's a great question, Tim Geddes. The answer is simple. It is, in fact, Thor, Love, and Thunder.
I can't wait!
Thunder!
On July 8th, and then the week after that will be Miss Marvel. So another Double whammy of MCU goodness back to back. While I have everyone here, let's give a little update on the future of In Review for the next couple weeks. Like I said, this week we have Moon Knight. Later we're going to be doing Jurassic World. Next week we're going to be doing Star Wars Episode 3, a rewatch leading into Obi-Wan that starts the next week. I'm very excited about that. That is going to be me, Sage Ryan, Barrett Courtney, and Anthony Carboni making a special guest appearance as our first ever guest plot recapper. So we'll see how that goes, how long that could be. But Carboni will be given the plot of Star Wars Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith. And then May 23rd, we got a double whammy for you that week. Top Gun 1 and Top Gun 2. It's going to be a fucking blast. I just heard Carter Harrell's theme song today for it, and I can't wait for you to hear it as well. Then May 30th, we get back to Jurassic World, Fallen Kingdom. And then the week after that, it's the final Jurassic World Dominion before we lead into our Thor rewatch that we're going to do leading into Thor Love and Thunder. And we got a little Buzz Lightyear in the middle of that somewhere to keep us all happy returning to Pixar. But anyways, that's In Review. It's going to be a very, very, very exciting next couple weeks. Until next time.
Have a marvelous day.